Good morning. We're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order at 9:05. Per usual, any members of the public who wish to address the Housing Commission must complete a speaker request form. You'll be limited to 3 minutes each. Collective testimony will be limited to no more than 15 minutes per side. Non-agenda public comments will be heard at the beginning of each meeting, so in just a moment. Those who wish to address the board about a topic that is not on the agenda must fill out a white speaker request form. Members of the public may also request to have an item pulled from the consent agenda by submitting a speaker request form prior to the start of the meeting. To speak on a matter on the agenda, members of the public must complete a speaker request form and submit it to the recording secretary before the item is called. Those who wish to speak in opposition must complete a pink-colored form. Those speaking in favor must complete the gold-colored form. Okay, and with that, we will go ahead and get started. Do we have any non-agenda public comment? Okay. Any commissioner comments? No? Wonderful. We are moving right along. And the report from the president and CEO.
Sorry, Madam Chair, I always have a few things to say here, if I could, please, for the record. First of all, these are events that have happened since the last meeting of this board. Yesterday, on July the 17th, the Housing Commission hosted a meeting of the State Assembly Select Committee on Housing Affordability for the Middle and Working Class. State Assembly Member Todd Gloria chairs this committee. The meeting included presentations about the use of state and local agency surplus land for middle-income affordable housing, the implementation of the Permit Streamlining Act, which requires local agencies to act on development projects within specific time limits, and finally, how middle-income housing production can help the state meet its climate goals. This is the second hearing of this select committee that the Housing Commission has hosted. The committee previously met here in December 2017. And I'll point out, last year I was among the panelists for a discussion at a committee meeting held at the Central Library on the same subject. I was able to share with the committee information about the Housing Commission's report from 2017 that identified the city's need for 100,000 to 220,000 new housing units to be produced between 2018 and 2028. And I think we all thank Assemblymember Gloria for his commitment to identifying solutions to the housing crisis here for both low-income and middle-income families. Also earlier this week, on Monday, July the 15th, the Housing Commission celebrated the grand opening, or reopening rather, of the Town and Country Apartments in the Mountain View neighborhood. Chair Benvenuto joined Mayor Kevin Faulkner and our partners at Chelsea Investment Corporation for this grand reopening event. This is a property the Housing Commission acquired in 2017. We worked through our nonprofit affiliate, Housing Development Partners, and also Chelsea to complete a comprehensive renovation at this property. This property is unique because we were able to convert some 46 previous market rate units into affordable housing and extend the affordability of an additional 97 units, so that all 143 units at Town and Country will now remain affordable for the next 55 years. This renovation also included the addition of a larger on-site community center where residents can access a computer lab, after-school programs for children, and adult education programs. Earlier this year, Town and Country was recognized with a Ruby Award from the San Diego Housing Federation as the Rehabilitation Project of the Year. We also are developing some media rock stars here. There was good KUSI coverage of this property that was done by Emily and Colin. I don't see them, either one in the room. Hold up your hands. Oh, there you are, both of you. We're developing a good cadre of media stars here. You did a great job, guys. Also, on July the 8th, I was pleased to be able to join San Diego City Council members Vivian Moreno and Chris Ward and additional partners in the community for the local launch of Habitat for Humanity's new national advocacy campaign, which is known as The Cost of Home. This campaign seeks to identify solutions and policies at all levels of government that will address housing affordability. It focuses on four priority areas. One is increasing the supply and preservation of affordable homes. Two is equitably increasing access to credit. 3 is optimizing land use for affordable homes, and 4, ensuring access to and development of communities of opportunity. This campaign aligns with the recommendations that the Housing Commission has made in our reports in 2015 and 2017 about addressing the housing affordability crisis in San Diego. With advocacy campaigns like Habitat for Humanity's Cost of Home campaign, we will continue to raise awareness of housing challenges and work toward bringing affordable housing within the reach of San Diego families. Also, on June the 28th, had a lot of media events the last month. On June the 28th, I was able to join Mayor Kevin Faulkner, Councilmember Chris Ward, and the Downtown San Diego Partnership to announce the expansion of the Family Reunification Program. As you all remember, this program is a part of Housing First San Diego, the Housing Commission's Homelessness Action Plan, which we launched in 2014. The Family Reunification Program collaborates with local service agencies like the City of San Diego and the San Diego Police Department's Homeless Outreach Team. It reconnects individuals and families living on the streets or in emergency shelters with family or other support systems through relocation assistance and follow-up services. On May the 3rd, this board approved awarding an additional $450,000 in homeless emergency aid program funds to support the expansion of this program, which has always been downtown, to areas outside of downtown, including Bankers Hill, Hillcrest, Barrio Logan, Golden Hill, Sherman Heights, and Balboa Park. With these funds, in addition to some $390,000 the Housing Commission previously had awarded for this coming fiscal year, this program is expected to serve some 1,400 San Diegans experiencing homelessness in this fiscal year. And you can do the even I can do the math on that. This is a cost-effective, successful program that is making a difference in our continuing efforts to address homelessness in the city in a very low-cost way, by helping to connect needy individuals with their families. And my kudos to the Downtown Partnership for coming up with this idea some years past. They've actually been able to help over 2,000 formerly homeless individuals reconnect with their families in years past, utilizing Housing Commission funding. Finally, on July the 11th, just last week, the Housing Commission received 3 awards of merit from the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials at the summer conference of that group that was held in Boston. Chair Benvenuto, Vice Chair Klumpner, and Commissioner Davis accepted the honors on behalf of the agency. The awards of merit, there are 3 of them. One is the Rental Assistance Division's completion of a business process reengineering program. We continue to try to do things better and more efficient going forward and providing better service to our families. The second is a comprehensive redesign with the Housing Commission's website last year, which is truly spot-on agency standard now and doing excellent publicity and communications about the Housing Commission. And finally, the Housing Commission housing affordability recommendations that the Housing Commission initially published in reports in 2015, 2017, and 2018. The totality of those 3 reports are pretty unusual and outstanding for this industry in providing a backstop and a background and planning for what needs to be done by the city going forward in expanding housing affordability for low and moderate income folks. And that latter one, those 3 reports, the housing affordability recommendations, has been nominated for another set of awards which are more exclusive and more limited at NARO's October annual meeting to be held in San Antonio. I expect it to win. And, Madam Chair, with that, that concludes my report.
Thank you. Lots of positive news. Next up, we have the approval of the minutes. Do we have a motion to do so? Okay. Moved by Commissioner Davis, seconded by Commissioner Hubbard. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. If it is okay with my fellow commissioners, I would like to move items 100 and 101 to consent. Is that, do we have any issue? No, do we need a motion for that? Or just a motion for the consent agenda?
Yes.
Okay. Motion to move to consent? Or a motion just for consent agenda? Okay. Okay. And I heard Commissioner Klumpner move. So, seconded by Commissioner Hubbard. Thank you. All in favor? Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. So next, we will vote on the consent agenda, which is items 100 and 101, the award of the landscape and irrigation maintenance service contract and the lease extension for TAL Store 828 at the Smart Corner building. Do we have a motion for the consent agenda? Okay, moved by Commissioner Klumpner, seconded by Commissioner Hubbard. Okay, all in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item 102, preliminary bond authorization for Courthouse Commons. Welcome.
Good morning. Colin Miller, Vice President, Multifamily Housing and Finance. I'm joined by Tina Kessler, Housing Programs Manager. The item before you today is a request to take the initial steps to issue multifamily housing revenue bonds for the acquisition and construction of Courthouse Commons, a 431-unit mixed-use rental housing development that will include 86 units of affordable housing, as well as 345 market rate, as well as office and commercial retail space. The 86 affordable units will remain affordable for 55 years. Staff is requesting that the Housing Commission recommend that the Housing Authority issue a bond inducement resolution for up to $235 million in multifamily housing revenue bonds, authorize an application and subsequent applications if necessary to SIDLAC, and approve the financing team of Jones Hall as bond counsel and Ross Financial as financial advisor. Additionally, the Housing Commission recommend that the City Council hold a Tax Equity and Fiscal Responsibility Act, or TEFRA, as a public hearing that would adopt a resolution approving the issuance of multifamily housing revenue bonds. As mentioned earlier, the project is a proposed 431-unit multifamily development located at 220 West Broadway in the Civic Core neighborhood of Council District 3. The project is located in a prime downtown location within walking distance to multiple MTS bus stops, trolley stop, and the Santa Fe train depot station with service by Amtrak and the Coaster. Additionally, the 37-story project will provide a world-class amenities package with a fitness center, dog run, rooftop lounge, complete with pool, spa, and outdoor terrace. The development will also provide 5 levels of subterranean parking. The development is providing both affordable and market-rate rental housing along with community space and retail space. There will be approximately 17,000 square feet of retail space and 235,000 square feet of commercial space. This is a big building. Residential project amenities, as I mentioned, include the clubhouse leasing center, a fitness center, the dog run, pool and spa, as well as the indoor-outdoor community space that you can see in this slide, which is a rendering of how it will look in the downtown skyline. You can kind of pick out the rooftop pool. It's kind of cool. The next slide shows a project rendering from the street level. Okay, thank you. Now, to summarize the developer's request, you are considering approvals to take the preliminary steps to issue up to $235 million in tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds. Approval of the bond issuance and TEFRA resolutions does not commit the Housing Authority to issue bonds. The bonds would not constitute a debt of the city. If bonds are ultimately issued for the project, the bonds will not financially obligate the city, the Housing Authority, or the Housing Commission, because the security for the repayment of the bonds will be limited to specific private revenue sources of the project. No loan funds are being requested from the Housing Commission. The developer of the project is the Holland Partner Group and an affiliate of North America Satsuki House. Both partners have a proven track record to implement, develop, and manage tax-exempt bond and tax credit transactions, as evidenced by their most recent project with the commission, Park and Market. The total development cost of the project will be approximately $248 million, which comes to around $574,000 per unit. Sources of funding include bonds, tax credit equity, and a developer equity contribution to the project. The developer has elected to provide 20% of the 431 residential units as affordable units on site. Those 86 units will be restricted at 50% of area median income for the next 55 years. Rents will range from $713 to $909 per month for the 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units. Eligible households and individuals will have incomes ranging from $38,950 up to $48,650 based on the 2018 rent and income chart. The remaining 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units will be unrestricted market rate rental units. This item will be brought back for final bond-related approvals in early 2020, and the developer expects to close financing in spring of 2020 and complete construction by June of 2023. This concludes our presentation. We are available to answer any questions along with representatives from the development team.
Thank you. Do we have any commissioner questions, comments? No? Okay. I'd love to talk a little bit about the per door cost. We recognize that 500 and some is a little higher than usual, but
sure.
I'm assuming that factors in all of the amenities. When we're talking about per door cost, we're not just limiting it to the cost of building that one unit. It also includes a rooftop pool and dog run and all that stuff, correct?
So the construction costs are based on the residential portion of the project. And so the main difference that we're seeing in the increase in costs, and the developer can speak to this as well, but we've been told it has to do with the increased space the building is being built. There's 60,000 square feet of park and market that came before this the board about 2 years ago. This project has 250,000 square feet, so it's a larger building. You're right, it's also the amenities package, and construction costs have gone up for steel and for plastic due to the tariffs. And I'm happy to turn over to the developer for if you have any more specific questions about costs, but that's the general answer I have for you.
That's sufficient. I just wanted to make sure we were calling that out.
Yeah.
We are always concerned about the cost of building, but it's a factor that we have to always watch. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, I'd like to also point out this is a signature class property, not unlike Park and Market from a couple of years ago. This is going to be a significant part of the downtown skyline. And I think it's significant that the affordable housing is being put on site and that the affordable housing will be indistinguishable from the other market rate properties here. I know there's always you can argue both sides of being inclusionary on site or having an off site, but to me a mixture of both is proper. And I think this will be again a signature property in downtown San Diego for years to come. And speaking for staff, I think we're very pleased to be a part of it.
Fair enough. It is a very, very attractive building. I'm looking forward to it. I work right next to it. I think that is great. And with regard to some of the conversations around inclusionary that are happening right now, 20% on site is certainly something that should be applauded, and we appreciate the opportunity that will present so many folks in downtown. So do we have a motion or anybody else struck with a need to say something? Okay, moved by Commissioner Davis.
Seconded
by Commissioner Klumpner. Any further discussion? All those in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Thank you. Item 103 is our final bond authorization for Wesley Terrace. Take it away.
Again, it's still Colin Miller. And this is joined by Tina Kessler, Housing Programs Manager. Tina will be providing the presentation for Wesley Terrace.
The item before you today is a request to take the final steps to issue multifamily housing revenue bonds for the acquisition and rehabilitation of Wesley Terrace that will remain affordable for 55 years. Staff requests that the Housing Commission recommend that the Housing Authority authorize the issuance of up to $22 million in tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds. The proposed rehabilitation project is an existing 161-unit development located at 5343 Monroe Avenue in the College area of Council District 9. Wesley Terrace is an existing 8-story building, originally built in 1973, as shown on this slide, and incorporates 114 studios, 45 one-bedrooms, and one one-bedroom manager's unit, and a two-bedroom manager's unit as well. This is a photo of the building as it sits currently in a typical unit interior. Following the completion of rehab, the units will be remain affordable at 50 and 60% of area median income for 55 years. This slide here shows the existing hallway on a floor and then also the existing community room space. Comprehensive renovations are planned for both units as well as the building, including flooring, fixtures, appliances, common area improvements, elevator improvements, and exterior painting and lighting improvements. To summarize the developer's request, you are considering approvals to take the final steps to issue up to $22 million in tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds. No loan funds are being requested for this project. Approval of the bonds, bond and TEFRA do not commit the housing authority to issue the bonds. The bonds would not constitute a debt of the city. If the bonds are ultimately issued for the project, the bonds will not financially obligate the city, the housing authority, or the housing commission, because security for the repayment of the bonds will be limited to private revenue sources specific to the project. The developer of the project is CNC Development Group and Dahl Development, LLC. Together, they have developed 28 properties, totaling over 36,000 units. Total development costs of the project will be approximately $32.7 million, which is about $203,000 per unit. Sources of funds include bonds, tax credit equity, capitalized interest from operation, and a deferred developer fee. Units will be restricted at 50 and 60% of area median income for 55 years. Rents will range from $936 to $1,203 per month for the studio and one-bedroom units. Eligible households and individuals will have maximum incomes up to $54,362 based on the 2019 rent and income chart. If approved today, the item will be presented at Housing Authority on July 30th. The developer expects to close financing in August and complete renovations by July of 2020. Thank you. That concludes our presentation. We're available to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any commissioner comments, questions? Commissioner Davis?
Simple one. I notice it says repair window hardware. Are the windows already energy efficient?
I'll have a representative from the developer come up and address the repairs.
Good morning, everyone. Colin Rice on behalf of CNC Development, one of the development partners in this project. Yes, all of the windows and sliders were replaced by the existing owners about 6 years ago in their energy-efficient dual-pane windows. Yeah, you're welcome.
Any other questions?
No? Thank you.
Okay, no problem.
Is there a motion? Moved by Commissioner Klumpner, seconded by Commissioner Hubbard. All those in favor? Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Okay. And that takes us to our workshop on property management and property maintenance departments.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, and Council. My name is Jennifer McKinney. I'm the Vice President of Real Estate Operations. And with me is Jason Wu, Housing Programs Manager, who oversees the maintenance program at the San Diego Housing Commission. We are delighted to present a workshop today on the property management and maintenance activities. There we go. As an overview for the benefit of our newer board members, the Housing Commission owns and operates a portfolio of housing stock consisting of 154 properties comprised of 2,195 units. It's a diverse portfolio ranging from studios up to five-bedroom units, from garden-style apartments to single-family homes to a downtown SRO, the historic Hotel Sanford. The team administers a number of programs at the properties, with the majority of the portfolio restricted at the 80% area median income level, which means that in order to qualify, a family of four can make no more than $85,600 per year. Approximately half of the households participate in the Housing Choice Voucher Program. The Housing Commission continues to operate 189 public housing units as well. The average occupancy throughout consistently hovers around 98 to 99%. The portfolio is geographically vast, spanning as far north as Del Mar, south to San Ysidro, east to the La Mesa border, and west to the beaches. The properties cover a 300-square-mile territory, and this scattered site structure presents unique challenges with staff oversight and the maintenance of these properties. We have, however, centralized operations into four regions, each with its own hub, office, or command central. This interactive Google Earth map can be found on our award-winning website located at sdhc.org. Jason and I feel absolutely privileged to be here in front of you this morning representing this team of talented and dedicated individuals. Today we hope to give you a small glimpse into the dynamic and exciting world of our frontline staff, a group who wears many hats, who sleeps with their phones on, and who serves as 51 proud ambassadors to this agency. So let's get to it. What does the property management staff do on an average day? The property managers may get a call from a prospect in the morning and are showing them a vacant apartment home by early afternoon. They may then meet with a resident regarding an issue, then switch gears and turn their attention to budget preparation. By the way, each of the properties has their own individual operating budgets. Regional managers on staff help shape policy and ensure program compliance. Office assistants accept work orders by phone and sometimes in person and may help prepare notices of an upcoming inspection. Every day is very different from the one before and almost always unpredictable, which is a difficult business model to live by. Speaking of budgets, the revenue driven by this group equates to $34 million. Our software platform, Yardi, has advanced tracking mechanisms and reports that assist, and just like a household budget, it must be closely managed. Every line item within every single property is scrutinized during budget season, and the team strives to create a realistic budget that supports our standards, yet still optimizes cash flow for agency activities. Aside from the day-to-day, this team also advances projects and various initiatives that support the agency's strategic plan, one of which is our team's commitment to reduce the number of days in which a unit sits vacant, allowing us to hand over the keys to our new residents sooner. The benchmark for this goal was about 50 days, and we partnered with other departments, such as rental assistance, procurement, and the Homeless Housing Innovations team to help us examine the process and identify opportunities to shave off time without compromising quality. The project was closed out successfully, exceeding the goal of 20% reduction, averaging a 40% reduction in fiscal year 19. You all know that the agency's motto is "We are about people," and nothing illustrates this more than resident services. This is not permanent supportive housing, so staff has gotten very creative at forming partnerships with others to provide meaningful services targeted to our resident population. Let's skip ahead to see some photos here. One such case was a suggestion by a property manager, Usiel. Usiel took note that the residents at the Hotel Sanford were underutilizing the community kitchen, so he reached out to Leah's Pantry, a nonprofit that focuses on connecting low-income households to better dietary practices. Leah's Pantry partnered with our team and started offering cooking workshops. As you can see from the photos, it grew into a highly anticipated event. Our team also partners with the Humane Society for companion animal assistance, training, and therapy support. The County of San Diego Health Department is sometimes called upon to provide education, such as health screenings for diabetes. Free tax return preparation is available to our households through another neat partnership forged with City Community Development. And another important collaboration to our staff, residents, and the community at large is one with the city, the police department, and the nonprofit Save San Diego. Through the nationally renowned crime-free multi-housing program, SDHC has certified 43 eligible properties to date. This program deploys a three-pronged approach that includes staff training, a site visit to assess the environmental design, and a community engagement event with the residents. Through this program, SDHC continues to demonstrate best practices on proactively mitigating certain risks. The site teams have worked hard to earn this designation, and in the photos, you'll see they stood proudly alongside Commissioner Ertassin and former Chief Zimmerman to accept an honor at a local news conference. We value development of talent. Much like other businesses, property management has evolved in recent years, becoming much more complex as we face today's issues and much more sophisticated as technology is integrated into our business. This has required us to sharpen our skill sets so we can effectively and efficiently manage what we refer to internally as our double bottom line. We are proud to tout that 70% of our property managers hold the Certified Apartment Manager designation through the National Apartment Association. We've set many new resolutions in this new fiscal year. We're working with our partners in financial services and IT on the activation of a resident portal that will allow residents to pay their rent, submit work order requests, and also serve as another conduit in communication with our staff, all done through the convenience of a portal. The team is also focused on improving the resident experience. A new program is on the horizon that will entail surveying our residents for their feedback and engaging them through other activities to inform our future programming. We're making a commitment to our residents that service is important and their needs are a priority. I look forward to bringing updates on this initiative to the board in the future. And without further ado, it is my pleasure to introduce to the board a very gifted and valued colleague in the department, Jason Wu.
Thank you, Jennifer. I've worked here almost 9 years and never had the privilege to address the board, so this is my first go. But I can't think of a better topic to talk about than the great work that my team does. So with that, our maintenance team is comprised of 24 dedicated men and women who are committed to providing quality homes for our residents. Between our maintenance techs, site cleaners, and maintenance supervisors, we provide day-to-day maintenance and repair service for all Housing Commission properties. As shown earlier, with 154 properties, almost 2,200 units, and a territory of 300 square miles, our plates are never empty and our gas tanks are rarely full. Fiscal year 2019 was no exception, as you can see, our team completed over 21,000 work orders, a 17% increase over fiscal year 2018. This increase in production is driven by numerous factors, including a new inspection program implemented by the Asset Management Department, a change in operating procedure that limits the number of tasks on each work order, and a concentrated effort to reduce vendor-related expenses by maximizing our own in-house talent. Like most affordable housing landlords, we are subject to a variety of routine regulatory inspections from organizations including the Real Estate Assessment Center on the federal level, the Tax Credit Allocation Committee at the state level, and our good friends downstairs on the third floor, our own rental assistance department. These inspections are thorough and include building systems, common areas, and unit interiors. Our own comprehensive preventive maintenance program helps ensure that our properties are always looking their best and that we're prepared for any of these inspections at a moment's notice. Of course, we don't do it alone. Our partnerships with local contractors help supplement the work performed by our in-house staff. Specialty trades like plumbing, electrical, landscaping help round out our overall maintenance delivery. We are extremely cognizant of our financial footprint and work creatively within the parameters of our operating budget in order to get the job done right the first time. We pride ourselves in being the ultimate problem solvers, utilizing whatever resources are allocated to us. As such, we performed within 0.5% of our largest budgetary category, which is ordinary repairs and maintenance. If you include our turnover and reserve expense categories, our overall department expenses came in a little over $5.1 million, which is a budget savings of around 9%. In addition to our day-to-day responsibilities, our department has been involved in numerous projects to help create efficiencies and deliver a quality product for our residents. Our mobile apps help us remain nimble and keeps all of our data in an easy-to-share electronic format. The days of clipboards and Polaroids have been replaced by mobile apps and tablets, which tremendously streamlines our communication and data-sharing abilities while working out in the field. So instead of having to decipher our notoriously sloppy handwriting, the only thing we have to worry about is the autocorrect feature on our iPads. Technology is great, but not perfect. Our soon-to-be-launched work order completion surveys will help us identify any blind spots in our service delivery and provide feedback from our most important stakeholders, our residents. We view these surveys as the final step in closing the loop on the work order process and as a means for us to understand how we can improve. The use of analytics and dashboards gives us a mechanism for measuring performance and establishing benchmarks both against prior years and against industry standards. Having data visualizations that are updated on a constant basis gives us the power to quickly check the pulse of our business unit. Furthermore, with over 21,000 work orders created this fiscal year alone, we are able to mine this raw data and produce analytical reports that show trends from the property level all the way to the portfolio level. These trends help us anticipate and plan for when or where our next big maintenance demand is going to be. So at their core, all of these accomplishments and technological advancements are simply 21st century tools that help us get the job done. They obviously do not replace the hammers, screwdrivers, and tape measures that are in our tool belts, but rather gives us the ability to focus our time on what we're really here to do. One of the recurring themes in our group centers around reliable, professional, one-time service, meaning when you need us, we'll be there. When we're there, you can expect nothing but professionalism. And when we're done, trust that the job was done right. We value craftsmanship, teamwork, and attention to detail, all in the name of delivering a quality home for our residents. Extending beyond the four walls, our building exteriors, landscaping, and curb appeal reflect a true pride in ownership to our neighbors and the community. Our expanding implementation of drought-tolerant landscaping aims to restore California native vegetation, reduce surface water pollution, and modernize the overall landscape aesthetic to align more with local industry practices. Our property management offices are not only a reflection of our agency's core values, but also an important first impression for prospective residents. We are committed to providing and maintaining purposeful, collaborative, and professional workspaces for our property management colleagues and any visitor that they may welcome. This too includes the numerous community rooms that are used for special events and various resident services hosted by the Achievement Academy and other sister departments within the Housing Commission. We will continue to look for opportunities where we can reinvent underutilized spaces and transform them into an amenity for our residents, the community, and the agency alike. Being on the cutting edge of technology, being on the cutting edge of any industry means keeping up with the latest products, methods, and equipment being introduced to the marketplace. As product lines catch up with technology, the cost associated with energy-efficient, durable, and attractive products decreases, making them a realistic option for multifamily housing providers. The installation of these products has numerous benefits, including reduced utility consumption, long useful life periods, and improved aesthetic appeal. Simply put, contemporary products can be cost-effective, durable, environmentally friendly, and pretty at the same time. We are constantly scanning the horizon for new products that check all of these boxes. And finally, as we look forward, we understand the value of a high-performing team and the positive impact that it has on our residents that we serve and the properties that we maintain. Through constant training, team-building exercises, and a little friendly competition, we are able to keep our talented maintenance professionals engaged with their work, with each other, and with the agency's mission. So with that, I just want to reiterate, it's been my privilege to represent my group in front of you today, and I'd love to answer any questions that you might have about us.
Thank you. Do we have commissioner questions or comments? Commissioner Klumpner.
Great job, Jason. I just wanted to say thank you. That was very impressive, and there was one line in there that stuck out to me, which is maintaining a high quality while also generating revenue. That is an impressive feat that this agency pulls off, and it's very remarkable when you step back and take a look at it. I'm sort of always amazed that if you drive through an area like North Park, and you look at multifamily housing, you can't tell the difference between market rate and affordable housing. And that is, I don't think that is by accident. That is by design, and that is through all of your hard work. So thank you.
Thank you.
Rick, did you want to add something?
Just a few comments, just to point out to everyone in the room, these folks have where my heart is. I spent most of my career before becoming a CEO of the back end of the business, operations, trying to make work what other people produced. So, sorry, Mike, Emily, everybody else in the room, if there's a dispute. Jennifer, I'm on her side. And we have markedly changed the way we operate this place since Jennifer, since we recruited you from Kansas City, about 9 years ago? Six years ago. Just seems like nine, right? But we took a different approach, and Commissioner Klumner, you would, as a policy wonk, you'd love diving into some of the stuff that they've got, the data stuff that was mentioned. And the double bottom line is on purpose. You know, if we achieve our social goals and lose control of the money, we're dead meat. If we control the money but don't produce the social goals, then we're less than humane. So we've got to do both, and we consider it a failure if we don't do both. And we also add a third leg to that triangle, if you will, and that is being transparent. In conclusion, I'll point out to you slide three of the presentation. We Google map every one of our properties, and I'm only aware of one other agency in the whole country that does that. So it's 2 out of 3,000. It's pretty exclusive. So we show everything we do. We're proud of what we do. We're proud of the changes we put into effect over the last 10, 11 years, especially the last six since Jennifer came here. And this is the part of the business, I'll use a sports metaphor, is like a blocker or tackle on a football team. You don't get noticed unless you screw up. And these people's best work never gets noticed, and that's a sign of a compliment toward them.
Thank you, Mr. Gentry.
I do want to just say congratulations. What a great job, great presentation also, what a great job on not only achieving goals set for some of them, but just exceeding them. It's wonderful to see some of the projects that you're thinking of in the future, and I just have to say, wow, it's great. What a great presentation.
Thank you. We will pass this along to the team who's out in the field right this minute working for our residents. Thank you very much.
I want to reiterate everyone else's comments. Kudos to whoever thought of having this workshop. What you all do is really important to the success of the residents, and being efficient, being timely, being accountable is so critical to building that sort of that level of trust with the folks who live there. I did kind of have a one-off question. How do you handle any situation where there may be translation needs for when you go into a unit and, you know, you're replacing something, but maybe we don't have a primarily English or Spanish speaker? How does that get managed?
That's a great question. We do have employees on staff who speak various languages, and we can sometimes engage them. But in the event that we can't, the agency has a language access plan that provides a toll-free number and free translation services. So I can't remember offhand how many different languages are included within that plan, many. So it's really never an issue for us. Good question.
I was just curious. And then one additional question. Think when you were talking about how as some of these more energy efficient and previously kind of things that were going to be too costly to put into our homes, now we're able to do that because they've become so mainstream. But on the other hand, we're seeing, you know, the cost of gas increases, and you've got this fleet of vehicles that's driving, you know, an incredible amount of miles. The cost of steel is going up thanks to some of the tariffs. How do you respond to some of those things when they change on a whim or based on a vote? And is there any way that any tools that you have to project cost increases in the future based on things like that, and how do you absorb it?
Sure. Some of that's difficult to anticipate because it's completely out of our hands and has to do with our relationships with other countries. It's difficult to anticipate the rise of cost. Basically, everything increases cost over time. That's kind of the method we take. We try to mitigate some of those costs by, as you mentioned, our fleet. We purchased some new fleet vehicles last year, all of which had significant fuel consumption savings over our old fleet. So it's kind of a balance, and we anticipate all costs going up. But whenever we can take advantage of something that's energy efficient, we try to do so. I mean, whether it's plumbing fixtures where it's less water coming out of the tap, or LED light fixtures that have sometimes a 30-year lifespan that we won't have to replace in 30 years that use significantly less energy than an incandescent bulb. Whenever we can take advantage of those kind of cost savings, we do. And to the cost of steel and plastic that are going up that Colin spoke about, fortunately, not a whole lot we can do about those things. Yeah.
This is almost ancient history now, but circa 2008 to 2012, the Housing Commission converted 1,366 former public housing units to locally owned and converted the subsidy from Section 9 to Section 8 and allowed the families who wanted to walk. Most, or at least half of the last report I heard of, stayed with us and opted with our properties against the private marketplace. The others, you heard Jennifer talking about a vacancy rate of 98 to 99%. We've been able to attract within what I call the modest marketplace to keep these properties operational despite a lack of direct demand-based subsidy is based on the marketplace. And one of the things that we did, and Jeff, I don't know who should address this, I'm going to ask you to figure it out. As part of our strategic planning that we did in 12 and 13, we adopted a green needs assessment program for our own properties. And Ryan tried to get ahead of the game on what we did to them instead of repairing after the fact, retrofit, make energy efficient, and do preventive maintenance front end. And Jeff, I don't know that whether that's you or Jennifer or Mike or whoever, that was a multi-program approach. I'd like somebody to spend a couple of minutes just talking about that, if they would, please.
Good morning, everybody. Mike Papko, Senior Vice President of Real Estate. So as Rick pointed out, we prepared a green physical needs assessment that looked at the capital needs for the entire portfolio, all 154 properties. And we've been slowly working every year on advancing renovations for those. We also are preparing a longer-term plan for the properties that Rick had mentioned, the former public housing, that's going to systematically put in place a program that will address all those needs over time. So by the end of that plan, we would have covered every single property, completed all those green physical needs assessment, and a lot of those items that Jason had mentioned would be upgraded. So we're going to have energy-efficient fixtures, plumbing, electric, double-pane windows, complete energy-efficient upgrades for the entire portfolio.
And what we try to do is not just problem-solve. Anybody can do that, although everybody has to wind up doing it from time to time. But if we can get ahead, if we can get ahead of the problem, prevent it from happening, and keep the problem from occurring, not only are residents better served, but it's more cost efficient. Because a problem does not occur, it doesn't, like we've done, doesn't always get noticed, but it's the right way to do business. And also, when we do address an issue, it's the old principle is the sometimes the least expensive way to deal with something is to do it right the first time. It's redoing that's expensive. So we try to make sure that our properties are quality built, quality retrofitted, not only from a resident standpoint, a resident honoring the residents, but from a cost efficiency standpoint too. And the folks here do an excellent job at that.
So unless we have any further comments,
thank you both. I hope you'll come back and visit us soon. I believe we are adjourned at 9:54. Do we need a motion for that too? Is there a motion to adjourn? Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you, Commissioner Davis. All those in favor? Great. We're adjourned.